Good evening. It's good to see everybody here. I want to invite you to turn your Bible over to Daniel chapter 6 as we begin. It's Daniel chapter 6. And while you're turning over there, let me just say a word of welcome to any visitors who are here tonight. We're very thankful for your presence, and we hope that you feel like our honored guest. And as always, if you have any question about the work and worship that we do here, we'd be glad to talk with you and to study the Bible with you. And we want you to feel welcome and join with us as we worship. And at this time, join with us as we read in the Scriptures and learn some lessons from God's Word. Daniel chapter 6, we'll read from there in just a moment. I'll start with a question this evening. If someone wanted to dig up dirt on you, how hard would they have to look before they found something? Imagine for a moment that your life was suddenly the subject of a very, very thorough investigation. If a couple of guys showed up at your doorstep and took your cell phone and took your computer and rifled through your belongings, would you be pretty nervous about what they might find? I imagine that wouldn't be comfortable for anyone, but you know, would they have to look very hard before they found anything? That's essentially what happened to a prophet named Daniel in the Old Testament. He was in his 80s at the time, and he was a governor in Babylon. And some of his jealous co-workers showed up one day, and they said, "We've got to find some dirt on this guy. And surely there is something, if we look hard enough, we'll find something that will surface about him." And they seems like they checked all of their resources and maybe searched through some of his things and whatever links they went to. And they could not find anything that he was doing wrong in his job. That's where they started. There's got to be some insufficiency in the way that he's doing his job. They couldn't find anything. He was just an outstanding worker and an all-around good person. And so they had to dig a little deeper. And in Daniel chapter 6, and if you'll read with me starting in verse 4, it says, "So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, 'We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God.'" So they searched whatever resources they had. They couldn't find any dirt. They couldn't find anything bad about this man Daniel. So they said, "You know, here we have a guy who is righteous. So what we're going to have to do is make righteousness illegal. That's the only way we're going to find any fault with him." And they convinced the king to sign a decree banning all petitions to God or man besides the king for 30 days. Now, I'm going to stop there before we go any further in that story. And we are going to talk about Daniel tonight. But I wanted to bring up this particular incident here in Daniel chapter 6 and Daniel's life so that I can focus on his character and on his integrity. What kind of person is beyond scrutiny? You know, here are people who they go looking and just imagine the lengths they went to try to find something on Daniel. They were really hunting hard, and they just couldn't find a bad thing to say about the guy. You know, I'm confident that if somebody wanted to say something bad about me, they could find a way to do it. But these guys couldn't even imagine a way to say something bad about Daniel. They held a magnifying glass to his life and couldn't find anything, not one thing, to bring out. And I hope that really stands out to you this evening about Daniel. How do you live life? And here's a man who is up, it would seem, in his 80s. And yet, how do you live 80 years on the earth without collecting even a little dirt? The title for the lesson tonight is How Daniel Guarded His Life from Sin. And the fact is that nobody lives a righteous life on accident. Daniel did not get to 80 years with no dirt to find on him by accident. And that means that we can learn some things from this prophet about righteous living. There are principles in his life that will help you and I to guard our lives from sin and to serve better our Heavenly Father. And we're going to highlight just a few of those principles this evening in the time we have left. So if you will, let's turn to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1 and start with Daniel as a young man. And we're just going to look at a few vignettes, if you will, from his life and discover some good principles for righteous living. And the first principle that we'll learn from Daniel as a young man is that we need to make big decisions at home. We need to make big decisions at home. In Daniel chapter 1, and starting in verse 1, it says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans." Now, this lesson does require us to remember a little bit of history. These events happened around 605 BC, and this was one of the darkest periods of time in the history of God's people in the southern kingdom of Judah. God had brought the Chaldeans, the Babylonian armies, into Judah, and in 605 BC, they began the process of taking over the city and seizing captives. And Daniel, a young man who is likely, you know, scholars say between like 13 and 20, we'll just say he's 16 so you can get an idea of what he might have looked like and what he might have been like in your head. He was one of the best and brightest of Judah. And he is taken along with many other young men with a plan to assimilate them to Babylonian culture and ultimately into the Babylonian army and teach them Babylonian practices and so forth. And you can imagine what a sad day this is for the people of Judah, because here they are watching, in this first wave of captives that's taken, they are watching the best and brightest. They're watching their future, these young men being taken and just watching their future crumble. Because if you know anything about Daniel, and if you read through this book and you understand about his integrity and his character, he would have made a tremendous leader for God's people. Just a wonderful man of integrity. And to watch those kind of men, the strong and the intelligent and the talented, just being swept away from Judah, it must have been so disheartening. But certainly the people, as they watched that happen, they knew it was because of their sin. It was because of their sin that their future is now being erased, and that these young people with so much potential are being taken out of the land. What a sad day that was. In Daniel chapter 1 and verse 5, and we'll read down through verse 8, tells us about what that whole process of assimilation looked like. Daniel 1 and verse 5, "The king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Now, when the Chaldeans were taking these young people from Judah and making them accustomed to Babylonian culture and assimilating them to Babylonian practice, what that involved, well, it involved reading Babylonian books. It involved training in their facilities. It involved taking on good Babylonian names. You know, forget those Hebrew names. We're going to give you new names. It involved learning a new language. And it would seem to me that, you know, as they're taking these young men and teaching them and training them in this culture and in the language and so forth, that there's a lot of these things Daniel could have done and that his friends could have done that would have been okay in the will of God and according to the law of God. I think he could have learned a new language and that would have been just fine. And he could have trained in their facilities and he could have read their books and taken on a new name and that would have been okay. But among these things that the Babylonians wanted these young men to do was to eat new food. And Daniel, even though he was a young man, he knew enough to understand that this food was not something God's law had permitted him to eat, and that in eating it, he would defile himself. And the New King James Version is what I'm reading out of. The text says there that he purposed in his heart, which is not a bad way of stating that. A better word, I think, in the ESV is that he resolved. But I think probably the one the translation that would speak most relatable to us would be the New American Standard, which says that Daniel made up his mind. He made up his mind that he would not defile himself. Now, let me stop here and say that we have the advantage of knowing how this story goes. We've read the story of Daniel, and for many of us, we've grown up with that story. We know that Daniel's going to make it through this situation, and we know that he's going to interpret dreams, and that we're going to read about him in Daniel 5, interpreting the writing on the wall, and we know that Daniel will be thrown into the lion's den, that God will shut the mouths of the lions. We know all of that history, but Daniel didn't. Daniel didn't know things were going to turn out okay. Not necessarily. For all Daniel knew, this could be the last meal he ever refused. And we're not told that he hesitated. We're not told that he doubted. It just says he made up his mind. Now, without trivializing the fact that this is captivity, they are captives, I think we can compare this to something like going to college. His parents are not there. His friends are not there. And for better or worse, if you've ever gone off to college or gone away to another town or another state when you were young, that's kind of an opportunity for a new beginning. And I say for better or for worse because it is. I mean, it can go one of two ways. Daniel was away from home. He was in a new place. He had new influences. And in all likelihood, Daniel could have eaten this food and gone right along with this Babylonian practice without his parents knowing, probably without any repercussions. And likely many of those who would have held him accountable would not have known any different. Do you think that Daniel made the decision not to defile himself right at the moment when that food was pushed in front of him? Do you think it was just kind of a spur of the moment thing where he thought, oh, I might eat, I'm not sure, man, it looks good. I have to make a decision. Or do you think that he had his mind made up before he was in that situation? The text says he purposed in his heart. I understand that. I don't think it means that he purposed right then and there. He had his mind made up. He had purposed already. He had resolved that he would not defile himself. Now, it's important for us to understand that God takes care of Daniel in this situation. In Daniel chapter 1 and verse 11, it says, Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. And they did that. They did that little experiment of eating a different diet for 10 days. And at the end of that 10-day period, it became clear to everyone that what Daniel and his friends were doing was better than even what the other young men were doing. Daniel chose not to defile himself, and God blessed him for that. So let's take a minute and put Daniel's lesson in practical terms. Put it to a little bit of a test. Have you made up your mind at home? Have you made up your mind before you go out anywhere else? Do you know, have you kind of thought through some of these situations that you might get in? How would I react if this happened? If your friend leans over in class during a test and says, let me see your answers real quick. Let me see what you put on number 4 there. Come on, just let me see what you got there. Do you already know what you're going to say back? Do you already know what the answer is? Or is that situation, is it kind of foggy to you? Do you kind of think, you know, I'm not really sure what I would do in that kind of situation. If your boss called you into his office and he said, you know, I know that the spreadsheet says that we made 100,000, but let's change it to 75 and you and I can split the difference. And you know what? They don't pay us enough here anyway. They don't pay us enough and we deserve it. And, you know, nobody will ever know the difference. Have you already made up your mind what you're going to say in that kind of situation? Or is that a little foggy to you? Not really sure what you would do in that kind of situation. If your boyfriend says, "My parents are out of town and we can have the house to ourselves tonight," do you already know what you're going to do? Do you already know the answer that's going to come out of your mouth? Have you planned that out ahead of time? The classroom is not the place to decide whether or not you're going to cheat. And the office is not the place to decide whether or not you're going to lie. And a dark room is not the place to decide whether or not you're going to defile yourself. Make your big decisions at home. Daniel did. He purposed in his heart. He made up his mind. And God blessed him for that. Secondly, we learn from Daniel to pray even when life is good. To pray even when life is good. Let's fast forward. I know we're going in a real time warp here. But fast forward about 70 years in Daniel's life. Let's pick up in Daniel chapter 6. We read just a little bit of this chapter earlier. Daniel chapter 6, and starting in verse 1. Says it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. And over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So now we come to Daniel when he's in his 80s. We're 70 years later from what we just read. And I think we can summarize Daniel's life by saying that he has done extremely well in Babylon. He's in this foreign place, in this foreign land, ungodly people, a pagan nation. And yet Daniel is now one of three governors who are directly under the king. He's done extremely well. Babylon was a massive empire, and they had conquered many other nations. And so to keep control of all these territories, the king set 120 of these leaders, these satraps, which were like local rulers over different Babylonian provinces. And then those satraps answered to three governors, to three heads. And Daniel was one of those governors. But it gets even better than that, because the text we just read says that the king was thinking about just making Daniel the leader over all of that stuff. So he was thinking about just giving Daniel the authority over all of it. So God has blessed Daniel, and he's put him in high places and given him authority and honor in this foreign land. Now, before we read the immediate context after verse 3 there, let's jump down to verse 10. And notice something about Daniel's day-to-day life in Babylon. Daniel 6 and verse 10 says, "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." So we read there that Daniel had a custom or a kind of habit that he had developed. He would go home and he would open his windows and he would face Jerusalem and he would pray and give thanks to God. Now, we know that Daniel's a righteous man. We know that about him. And so maybe we expect, as we read through this book, we expect to see him praying. But it's pretty specific what it says about his prayer practice. It doesn't just say that he prayed. You know, it goes into those details that he went home, opened his windows, faced Jerusalem, and he would pray and give thanks to God. Does that seem a little specific to you? He would face Jerusalem and do it in this way. Where would Daniel get the idea that he needed to pray in that specific way? Well, I'll offer a suggestion, and I don't know this for sure, but look with me in 1 Kings chapter 8, and keep a finger there in Daniel. In 1 Kings chapter 8, we read about Solomon's dedication of the temple. And part of that dedication involved praying to God about the future of his people. And Solomon even prayed to God about the event of captivity, about these future generations in Israel, and should the time come that they find themselves captives, that they are given into the hand of another nation, Solomon prayed for that event as well. It just so happens that when we read about Daniel, that's exactly the case. He is a captive in a foreign land with his brethren. And in 1 Kings chapter 8, we read about Solomon and that dedication and that prayer for the future of God's people. 1 Kings 8 and verse 46, this is Solomon's prayer. It says, "When they sin against you, for there is no one who does not sin, and you become angry with them and deliver them to the enemy, and they take them captive to the land of the enemy, far or near. Yet when they come to themselves in the land where they are carried captive, and repent and make supplication to you in the land of those who took them captive, saying, 'We have sinned and done wrong, we have committed wickedness,' and when they return to you with all their heart and with all their soul in the land their enemies who led them away captive, and pray to you toward their land which you gave to their fathers, the city which you have chosen and the temple which I have built for your name, then hear in heaven your dwelling place, their prayer and their supplication, and maintain their cause." Do you think that Daniel knew that passage? Do you think he knew what Solomon had prayed during that dedication of the temple? That when this people turns to you and turns toward your land and your city and your temple and prays, hear their prayer, have compassion on them. Perhaps Daniel, in this practice, he was praying and hoping and turning to God in hopes that his brethren, his countrymen, would turn as well, and that one day they might be freed from that captivity and return to their God. Now, regardless of why Daniel was praying that way, the real point is that prayer was Daniel's usual. It wasn't just something he did when life was hard or when he needed something. He did it always. When I was preaching in Pineland, I had a lesson suggestion box, you know, like a little wooden box with a lock on it. And I always hoped that the members would come back and drop little suggestions in there, because it's hard to know what to preach on. I don't know if you guys realize that, but it's not always evident, you know, what's a good thing that everybody needs to hear and what's going to be most beneficial to the congregation. It's kind of hard to come up with lesson topics sometimes, even though the Bible's mighty big and there's a lot of information there. Sometimes you just wonder what do the members want to hear and what do they need to hear. And so we put out that suggestion box. I didn't get a whole lot of suggestions. I only remember one that ever got in the box, and it was kind of all crumpled up, you know. And I kind of wonder if somebody intended it for the trash bin, but it just got put in the wrong box, you know. And I unrolled that paper, and it said, "Why pray when God already knows what you're going to ask for before you ask it? Why pray when God knows your heart, when He already knows what you're going to say?" I thought that was a pretty good question. Jesus did tell His disciples in Matthew 6 that your Father knows the things you need before you ask Him. And so if that's the case, then why even pray? If God already knows what you're going to say, isn't that a waste of breath? Well, maybe it would be a waste of breath if prayer were about informing God of anything, but it's not. Prayer is not about informing God of the things you need. It's about communicating with Him. Does God know that you need food every day to keep you well and to keep you alive? Absolutely He does. Does God know that you need clothes on your back and a roof over your head? Absolutely He does. Does God even know when you're struggling with temptation and you have specific things that you need help with? Absolutely He does. And He knows if a sister is down and ill and she needs prayers. He knows all of those things. But you don't pray to God to inform Him. You pray for the reason that Daniel did. He loved God and he wanted to communicate with his Father and with his Creator. And perhaps he even had in mind the scripture we just read, where Solomon said that God would comfort his people if they repented and prayed toward Jerusalem. Daniel communicated with his Father. Pray even when life is good. Do you ever treat God like a vending machine? I do. When things go wrong, and you know, when the job situation is not what it should be, when the car situation is not what it should be, those are the times, I'll be honest, those are times when I go real heavy in prayer to God. But not at other times. I think God likes it when the phone rings in heaven and it's not about a car and it's not about rent and it's not about a job, but it's just about wanting to talk to our Father and to talk to our Creator. God wants to hear from you even when life is good. And we need not forget that. Daniel reminds us to talk to God all the time. It was his custom. It was his habit, even when things were fine. And finally, we learn from Daniel that we need to trust God with the details. Let's pick up in Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10. Daniel 6 and verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. So they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king established may be changed. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. I hope you see how great verse 10 is. Daniel hears about the decree that no man can petition God or man except for the king for 30 days. No prayer, essentially. Daniel hears, you can't pray. And what does he do? He says, I need to pray about that. they've forbidden me to pray, so I need to go home and pray about that. And this was not just Daniel trying to be a thorn in the side of the king or trying to rebel against the establishment. As we read, it was his custom. It's what he always did. And what that tells us about Daniel is that his actions were not determined by his consequences. He wasn't going to stop doing the right thing just because it would bring negative consequences for him. And it did. He was thrown into the den of lions. Now, I won't read the rest of the text. I think for the most part, we know where the story goes from here. God shuts the mouth of those lions. Do you ever wish you could sit down and have a conversation with great men and women that you read about in the Bible? What would it be like if we were to interview Daniel? Or even if you were able to watch an interview with Daniel, something like Charlie Rose maybe. And if the interviewer were to ask, you know, Daniel, you were so obedient at a young age. Whenever you refused the king's delicacies, how did you know that everything was going to work out? How did you know that you wouldn't be put to death for not eating what the king set in front of you? And maybe he would ask, you know, Daniel, you were so bold when you told King Belshazzar in chapter 5 that the writing on the wall meant the end of his kingdom. That's what Daniel did in chapter 5. Here was this writing on the wall, and he could have told the king, oh, it's good news for you. But he was honest with the king. It means the end of your kingdom. How did Daniel know that was going to turn out okay and that he wouldn't be killed? Or maybe the interviewer would ask, man, Daniel, you were so courageous when you continued to pray to God even after the king's decree in chapter 6. How did you know it was going to work out and that you wouldn't be killed? And Daniel's answer to all of that, I believe, would be, I didn't know. I didn't know it was going to work out. I didn't know all the details about how God was going to take care of these things. I didn't know I wouldn't be killed. Daniel didn't know all the details about what was going to happen to him. But he trusted that God knew what needed to happen. And he trusted that God would sort out the details. It's hard for us to let go of the details, isn't it? Because we live in an age, I'm sure some of us realize this more than others, but we live in an age where we are spoiled with details. We get to control just about every minute detail of what happens in our life. We have some control over that, and we must have control. We feel that way. A couple of months ago, there was an uproar on the internet whenever the iPhone 7 was released, and it had no headphone jack. and people were tweeting just how upset they were. You know, here's this little detail that, you know, you can buy a little extender for a few bucks, but that doesn't matter. We're upset. No headphone jack. And, you know, you could tell someone, well, go buy a different phone. But I don't want a different phone. I like the details of the iPhone 7. I just wish that were different. The other day at work, my coworker actually said these words to me. He said, "I'm so mad because there are so many good shows to watch on Netflix and Hulu, and I can't watch them at the same time on my phone. I wish I could just watch both programs, and there's so much good stuff to watch that I'll never be able to watch at all." And he was mad about that. Now, I'll give him credit. There's a lot of good stuff to watch, so maybe he had a point there. But there's almost no aspect of life in our culture where we do not get to control every detail. We control the food that we eat. We control the clothes that we wear, all the details about the home that we live in, the people we spend time with, our work, all of that. We have more control over every detail than any generation before us. And what all of that has created is a generation of young men and women who feel they are entitled to have control over those details of how their life is going to go. And I'm part of that generation. The problem is we just don't. We don't really have control. It feels like control, but we don't really have control. God does. There were a whole lot of people who felt they had all the details nailed down around lunchtime on Tuesday, November 8th. And by dinner, they realized they had no control at all. God controls the details. And when we feel anxious about the details, let's remember to read about Daniel in Daniel 6 and verse 23, which says, "Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God." Not because Daniel had control over the situation, but because he believed in his God. And his God had control. As we close tonight, let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. And I appreciate your attention this evening. 1 Peter chapter 2. I try not to call attention to things, but I know that my voice has not been fun to listen to tonight. I just realized those pages are missing from my Bible. Does anyone have a Bible that I could borrow? That's mighty embarrassing. Tia's been threatening to buy me a new one soon, but the honest story is I think our corgi tore those pages out of my Bible, our little puppy dog, but, you know. 1 Peter, that's all I can say, you know. 1 Peter chapter 2, how did Daniel live righteously and guard his life from sin? He made his big decisions at home. He prayed even when life is good, and he trusted God with the details. There's a lot more we can say about Daniel, but those are hopefully three lessons you can take with you tonight. Daniel's story falls into a common theme, which is the fish out of water theme in the Old Testament. We can talk about Abraham, who was, you know, who went out from Ur of the Chaldees from his home and went into a land that God was going to show him. We can talk about Esther and Joseph, people who found themselves in a situation in an ungodly place, and were out of their element, or out of a godly element at least, but still remained in a godly way. And Daniel falls into that category. And when we read about figures like that in the Old Testament, we need to draw strength from them, because they're not just stories. They are examples for us. And I think Peter reminds us of that. In 1 Peter 2 and verse 11, and we'll end with this passage. Peter says, "Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation." Daniel lived such a life that when he got to old age, there were men who went looking for bad things about him and couldn't find anything to say. And Peter gives us that admonition, but even perhaps takes it a step further. Let's live in such a way that by our conduct, men might observe us and glorify God in the time when they might be visited. Or I think perhaps that talks about them being forgiven, obeying the gospel, that they would glorify God. Live in such a way that might just bring people to Christ when they observe your good conduct. So my question is to you tonight, are you living in that way? Are you living in such a way that someone might just observe you and come to Christ because of your conduct and at least want to know more about why you live the way that you do? Let's take that lesson from Daniel. And if there's some way we can help you tonight, maybe in reading about Daniel and his righteous life, you realize that there's something that needs to change. Maybe you need the prayers of the saints, encouragement in trying to live the Christian life. If we can help you do that tonight, or if we can help pray for you or encourage you in whatever way, let us know how and come forward while together we stand and while we sing.